All right, this is Margaret Plattner, Deputy Commissioner for the Kentucky Department of Veterans Affairs. Today's date is August the 24th, 2009, and I'm interviewing Captain Marge Graves, who served during Vietnam, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And I tell you what, why don't you state your name, your branch of service, your length of service, and your area of specialty.
Okay, Margaret. My name is Marjorie Graves, and I'm known as Marge. And I was in the Army Nurse Corps from actually 1967 until 1972. My primary responsibility in the military was I was mostly assigned as a head nurse on male orthopedic units. So most of my patients were Vietnam returnees and Vietnam injuries.
Okay. Tell me something about your background prior to joining the military.
I had never wanted to be anything in my life but a nurse, and that came to fruition when I went to St. Mary and Elizabeth Hospital School of Nursing here in Louisville when I graduated from high school in 1965, and graduated from that school in 68, and in 1967 we had an Army recruiter that came to our School of Nursing that wanted to discuss the possibilities that the military would provide to nurses if they so chose to take that direction. And I was very excited about it because I knew it would give me an opportunity to have some freedom. I lived in a fairly strict family environment. And so in 67, I joined the military. And when I graduated in 68 and passed my state boards, I went to basic training and went on active duty as a commissioned officer.
Okay. As a second lieutenant?
Second lieutenant.
Second lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And why did you join the military, and why did you select the branch of service that you did?
I probably selected the Army because that was the only recruiter that I had had any exposure to while I was in the in nursing school, and really didn't have a lot of exposure to different branches of the service. My father had been a Navy World War II veteran, mm-hmm. but that was before my time, and he really didn't talk a whole lot about that. But, you know, I selected the Army because the recruiter really did a good job of explaining opportunities. I have, once I passed my state boards and I graduated from nursing school, I would have a 2-year commitment to serve on active duty in the military. And as I said, I lived in a really strict family.
How so?
Well, we had 3 daughters in my family, mm-hmm. and my parents were very strict. In fact, I never even learned how to drive a car until I was 26. My father was a very strict German and didn't believe that women really needed to learn how to drive unless they could afford to buy a car and pay for the insurance. And so he had the only car that was his way to get back and forth to work because he was a primary wage earner. And so I was one of those people for a long time that stayed underneath the controls of a strict home environment. But I could see that the military would give me an opportunity to get out from underneath that and also to do some traveling. And it gave me, the last year nursing school, I earned about $300 a month. My tuition was already paid for at that point by
the
my
Army?
Parents.
Oh, by the parents.
Yeah, yeah, and the Army gave okay. me that money as a private E2 as long as I fulfilled my 2-year commitment.
And so did they pay for your education once you filled for nursing, once you fulfilled your commitment to the Army?
They could have, but my parents chose, when I went into nursing school at that point, was very, very inexpensive.
Okay.
And my parents chose to go ahead and pay for my tuition, my 3-year schooling up front, and that was already taken care of by the time that I joined the military. And my parents really didn't ask me to give them any of that money back that I earned from the military.
So. What opportunities did the Army offer you besides travel? Did they tell you anything else besides the travel that encouraged you in any way to join?
At that point, there was a reality. The Vietnam War was going on, mm-hmm. and there was always that reality that it was going to, you had a good potential to be sent to Vietnam, but they really did encourage nurses to progress in their field. The military nursing is really different than civilian nursing. You have a lot more freedom to independently think about patient care. There were many things that we did not have to have orders for that civilian nursing, I mean, you, in a civilian nursing position, you wouldn't give an aspirin without a doctor's order, but there were many medications that we were able to give without a physician's order. I knew that if I did have an opportunity to go to Vietnam, I mean, many of the nurses there were suturing, inserting chest tubes. They just had a lot of opportunity for experience that you just wouldn't have had in civilian life.
Okay. And list for me each tour of duty and your particular assignment.
Okay. I actually served 4 years on active duty.
Okay.
I went to basic training in May of 1968, mm-hmm. right after I graduated, took my state boards, went to San Antonio, Texas for my 6-week basic training. And after that, I went to Fort Hood, Texas and stayed there for a year and a half. I served at Darnell Army Hospital.
Let me go back just a little bit. Tell me about your basic training. Tell me about that.
That was a real interesting experience for me. I guess it was an eye-opener to the fact that what I had perceived the military was going to be like was a little bit different for the medical field. Our basic training, their goal was to primarily teach the physicians and the nurses during the 6-week period of time what military protocol was about. They taught us how to shoot a 45. We went out in the field for a day and qualified with this small pistol. They taught us how to march. They, you know, like I said, they taught us military protocol, how to salute, how to wear uniforms. And then there was a short portion of it that taught us what the jungle life could possibly be like if you did receive a tour of duty in Vietnam. But it was very, very classroom, just a very basic course. It wasn't anything in comparison to the average person's basic training. I was very fortunate. I was living at Fort Hood, Texas at the time that I went into basic training, and I ended up signing in maybe 5 minutes before the deadline and the time period, and there were no quarters left in the military housing on post. So I spent my 6 weeks in basic training housed at a Sheraton hotel. So it was quite an interesting experience, and I thought, boy, if this is what the military is going to be like, I'm really going to like it.
Did you train with all women?
No, there were men and women.
Who were in the field of nursing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, there were a lot of male nurses that were in the military, and our basic training was primarily with men and women.
Were they called nurses or were they called something else?
No, they were called nurses too. Okay. We had, of course, a large group of medics that were pretty much our right and left hands in the military. I don't know what I'd have tremendous respect for that group of military people. But they were Army nurses just the same. The only thing that was a little bit different back in the time that I was in the military was if you were married at the point, if you were a female and you were married at the point and you were married to a non-male service member, they could not be considered dependents. And that was something that, needless to say, changed down the road. And then at the time I was in the service, if a female became pregnant, whether you were married or unmarried, you were boarded out of the military. And that certainly has changed at this day.
So you do your basic training in Texas, and then where's your first assignment?
Okay, my first assignment was at Fort Hood, Texas, at Darnell Army Hospital, and I stayed there for about a year and a half, and then requested to come to Fort Knox, Ireland Army Hospital in Fort Knox.
Did you want to come back to Kentucky?
I wanted to come back to Kentucky, and had, you know, enough of that duty assignment, and at that point you could request a change in duty, and if that was what the military needed at that point, they were very agreeable to letting you make a duty change assignment. So I came back to Fort Knox, Ireland Army Hospital, and again, it was still maintaining.
This is during the height of the Vietnam War.
The height of the Vietnam War. This was back, well, things were really hot in Vietnam, 67, 68. 68 was the Tet Offensive, and I came back to Fort Knox in 70, the early part of 70. And every bed, I had like a 250-bed male orthopedic unit, and just about every bed that we had was filled with Vietnam returnees that that were waiting to either be boarded out of the military or lived close to the Kentucky area, and they were trying to get them as close as they could to back to their home until they were able to be discharged from the hospital. So I really had an introduction to between Fort Hood, Texas and Fort Knox of taking care of the Vietnam returnees.
Were those your two assignments? Did you have another assignment after that?
I went to Vietnam. Okay.
Did you request to go to Vietnam?
I did.
Okay.
I did.
And why did you do that?
I was really naive about a lot of the facts about Vietnam as far as the countryside was concerned at that point. I guess I was so busy taking care of the patients and in my own personal life that I didn't take a lot of time to get to know the true history of what was going on in Vietnam. But I had this kind of pie in the sky idea that if, you know, I was always very dedicated and still am very dedicated to nursing, but I thought maybe if I went to Vietnam that I might be able to be the Florence Nightingale that could, you know, could really change things or, you know, make a difference for these people and
for the military members.
Right, okay. Military members. Yeah, the soldiers that came back from Vietnam were unlike any group of military patients that I ever took care of.
In what way?
They were humbled. They were appreciative of anything and everything that you did for them. They had made an ultimate sacrifice, which was, you know, being injured, or, you know, certainly some of them never even made it back alive from Vietnam. But, you know, I just really wanted to go over there and make a difference. And so I volunteered to go. And my chief nurse was very surprised that I was interested in going. And but he told me probably I would get orders within 6 months. Went home that day and told my family about what I was doing, and my father was very, very unhappy with the decision I had made. He said he had had three daughters, knowing that none of them would probably ever have to go in the military, and of course I was the one that joined the military, and then volunteering to go to the war zone, he didn't quite understand it, but you know, I was pretty independent at that point and was able to make my own decisions.
But you were still living at home at that point?
No, okay. No, I was living at Fort Knox.
Okay.
Once I went into the military,
I never lived at home again. So let me backtrack for a minute. How was the Vietnam soldier different from any other soldier that you had been dealing with in terms of medical care?
I think that they, once they got back to the United States, they were so thankful to be back on U.S. soil again, and like I said, they had a different attitude than the average soldier had. Many of our other patients that were not our Vietnam returnees were basic trainees, and of course they were just getting a taste of the military, but the Vietnam soldiers had already had a pretty significant taste of sacrifices that military members make for defending our country and for the freedom of our country. And of course, many of them did not have a decision as to whether they were going to Vietnam or not. That was during the draft and when they were sent to Vietnam, and you know, many of them probably would have chosen not to have gone that direction, but they did. And they were so grateful for, you know, having clean beds and having, you know, being home around their family and just being what they considered a safe place to be.
Okay, so how long, once you put in your request to go serve a tour of duty in Vietnam, how long was that tour and how soon thereafter did you go?
Okay, well, when I, like I said, the day that I volunteered to go to Vietnam, my chief nurse probably told me it would take about 6 months mm-hmm. before I would go. Well, I went back to work the next day, and they told me that was my last day to work, mm-hmm. and I would have a 30-day leave of absence, and mm-hmm. that they needed my specific, they called it MOS, which had to do with what your military job would mm-hmm. be, your job title mm-hmm. was, mm-hmm. and they needed my MOS in Vietnam, so I would have 30 days, and so within about 3 days, I got all the shots that I needed to get, which probably would have taken me about a 2-week period of time to get those shots. But I started my 30-day leave of absence, mm-hmm. and then 30 days after that point, I think it was on the 26th of July, I believe, in 1971, I was on my way to Vietnam.
Where did you fly out of?
I flew out of San Francisco.
San Francisco?
Yes.
Okay. And was it a nonstop flight? I'm just curious. Or did you have a layover anywhere?
No, they actually made two stops. We stopped in Camp Zama Japan for the first stop over, just basically to fuel. Mm-hmm. And then I'm not real sure where the second stop was, but it was quite an interesting trip for me. Mm-hmm. The plane, it was a big 747 Pan Am jet, and the plane was filled with military people, and I was the only female military service member on that airplane.
And the anyone only, ask you to marry you?
Oh, no, I sat, I sat in the front seat, uh-huh. probably white-knuckled to the seat the whole time there, and fortunately I had a military police warrant officer that sat next to me that really took care of me, and he was on his way back to Vietnam after bringing a prisoner back to the United States, and he just kind of did the big brother routine on me and, you know, helped me get through the whole thing, stayed right by my side when we got off the plane, and he just really took care of me, and it helped because I was scared to death at that point.
Just because you were flying overseas for the first time and being far away, or?
I think the reality of the independence of the decision that I'd made hit me. And then, I don't think there were female flight attendants on that flight, but I had never been in the female minority that much as I was at that point. And it was just a little overwhelming for me.
Okay. And so you arrive into Vietnam.
I arrive into Vietnam and they open up the door of the plane.
Where'd you fly into? I'm curious.
Into an airport. Base called Benoit, B-I-E-N-H-O-A.
Okay.
And they had two primary airports that they used at that point, Tonsonut and Saigon, and then Benoit, which was real close, ended up to be real close to the hospital that I got assigned.
Okay.
And they put us on buses. Well, immediately when they opened up the door of the plane, there was an odor that was unlike anything I had ever smelled before.
What was it?
Well, I found out after I had been over there for a while that it was the strong smell of diesel fuel and burning excrement that, you know, we burned a lot of fecal material from the outhouses. That was there was no sanitation system. And that was the means of how we got rid of a lot of the material that we're in outhouses, and mm-hmm. and it had a specific smell. And years later, you know, even today, if I can get a real strong sniff of smell of diesel fuel, it will immediately
take me back
to that first impression that I had.
Okay, so you had that first impression. Was it unnerving? Was it just an observation?
I think it was an observation.
Okay.
Because, you know, at that point, you've been traveling for 20 hours. I was exhausted.
I'm sure.
You know, I had no idea what was ahead of me. You know, I am still wearing a regular dress type of military uniform with heels on. My feet were swollen like bratwurst, which I had never had problems with that. And I was just exhausted from the whole trip. And then, you know, very, very interested in what was coming next.
Mm-hmm. So you get off the plane. What happens next?
They ordered us onto buses, and we went to a place called the 94th Replacement Battalion, and it was there in Benoit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was where you were going to be staying for at least 2 to 3 days to determine where they were going to assign you in Vietnam. They would process all your paperwork. You would be given your combat boots and your fatigues, and learn that was going to be your military dress then for the rest of your tour of duty.
So you wore fatigues?
We did wear fatigues.
Okay. And pants, you didn't have to wear?
Yeah, we wore pants.
Okay.
Yes. Now, there was one hospital in Vietnam where the nurses, it was more of a formal hospital. The nurses wore white uniforms and the same military uniforms that we wore back stateside, nursing uniforms, but no other hospitals in Vietnam were, you know, required you to wear that dress.
How many military hospitals were there in Vietnam?
Oh, gee, Margaret, I'm not sure. Maybe 5 or 6. I hate to be real specific.
Located
because I've
throughout
not
South Vietnam?
Located, yes.
Okay.
Around South Vietnam.
Okay.
Most of them were evacuation hospitals like I worked in that were like in metal Quonset huts, very, very primitive, basic hospitals, and they were there just to either get the injured soldier stabilized to the point where they could be transferred out to, in most cases, Camp Zom in Japan, or they would be repaired and be sent back to duty if that was a possibility for them.
So you get your assignment and you report to duty, and tell me about your, do you remember your first day? Do you remember your impressions?
I do. The military police officer that I told you that I sat with on the plane basically recommended some of the hospitals that I might ask for, and I did get the hospital that was real close to Saigon, and it was called the 24th Evacuation Hospital in Long Bien. And my first day, we just pretty much took a tour of the hospital to see what it was like, and right after I got there, I developed a horrible case of dysentery. For whatever reason, and for my first week in Vietnam, I was on IVs and pretty much stuck in my room in this quarters where they had the nurses stay. And it was not a real great initiation to what my experience was going to be like. But recovered from that and was told I was going to be a head nurse on a male orthopedic and a male genitourinary ward. We had a fair number of patients in Vietnam that may have, had typical kidney stone issues or bladder issues, but we also had a fair number that had developed venereal diseases over there and would get to the point where they weren't able to void, so they would mm-hmm. have to be hospitalized mm-hmm. on IVs to mm-hmm. get them back to whole people that they could function and go back to duty.
Okay. And which tour of duty was your favorite and why?
I guess I would have to say my Vietnam tour of duty was probably my most favorite. I always tell people it was the best of times and it was the worst of times for me.
Tell me why it was the best. Tell me why it was the worst.
It was the best because I had never worked in an environment, and even never after my experience, where the medical people worked on in such a team concept. Of course, in Vietnam, the people that you worked with were the people who you lived with, mm-hmm. people who were your social life, they mm-hmm. were your family, mm-hmm. your friends, mm-hmm. and your coworkers. And so there was not any type of class system distinction between corpsmen, nurses, physicians. We all referred to each other by our first names.
Are you a second lieutenant, first lieutenant, or a captain?
I was a captain at that point. Okay. I went over it then.
So even the enlisted personnel called you by your first name versus captain? Okay.
Yes. And, I would say the military wasn't real crazy about that. Mm-hmm. But, there were just some things that we might have pushed the envelope a little bit on. Because, mm-hmm. like I said, these were people that you spent so much time with off duty. We worked 12-hour days, 6.5 days a week, and we either worked 7 in the morning till 7 at night or 7 p. to 7 a. So you were working long hours, mm-hmm. and we just felt more comfortable with having a more casual mm-hmm. relationship
with people we worked with. And you socialized with these people as well. Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay, and that probably did that breed a sense of camaraderie?
Yes, it did. It did. Also, best of times, because I was very, very fortunate when I went to Vietnam. I was selected to do some things that I know the average nurse did not have an opportunity to do, and it gave me...
And what? It gave me an example.
Okay, when I was over there, I guess about 4 months, they were starting to plan for the Bob Hope Christmas show and the Sammy Davis Jr. show. Bob Hope was coming over in December, and Sammy Davis was going to come over in January to entertain the troops. And they picked a doctor and a nurse that were actually serving tours of duty in Vietnam to provide the medical support for both those trips and tours. And I got selected to be the nurse. So it exposed me to things. I mean, I actually gave Jim Neighbors an IV, which is sort of my claim to fame. But it gave me an opportunity to see different parts of Vietnam and Thailand that I would not have seen had I done that. Mm-hmm. And it was also nice because it gave me a couple week break from what I was doing on a daily basis in the hospitals. And it was nice to have a little change in my routine.
And what about your assignment was the most difficult?
Just seeing the destruction, the physical and mental destruction that was a result of that war. I saw trauma unlike anything I had ever seen before. About 2 weeks before I was supposed to come home, we had a big Chinook helicopter that had about 60 soldiers on it, and they were transporting all those soldiers that had not had any time off for about 3 months to a beach area in Vietnam. And Vietnam is a beautiful country.
Is it?
It is. It's got some beautiful areas and beautiful beaches. And they were taking these fellas to a beach area to give them what they called a four-day R&R, rest and recovery, and rest and recreation. And they got right outside our hospital and the helicopter exploded. And
were they coming into the hospital or lifting off and leaving the hospital?
No, they were just flying near the hospital because they were on their way to the beach area. And the beach area was not too far from our hospital. So they brought all those bodies back to our hospital. Every one of them were killed.
How did it blow up?
They don't know. Just some kind of they cited some mechanical failure on the helicopter, but they never really knew it. You know, it was not hit by enemy fire. But I was one of the senior nurses at that point, and even though I didn't have to handle doing the physical handling of the bodies or the body pieces that came back to our hospital, I had to be right in there to help with the paperwork and be side by side with the corpsmen and the physicians that were actually doing the physical handling of those bodies. And it was, I mean, most of them came back like charcoal briquettes. You would see an arm with a wedding band on it or part of a torso that might have a burned head. The first two that they brought back were not burned, but they had like a leg bone sticking down through the bottom of a boot, or one fellow had his neck broken and his whole body was squashed. It almost looked like something heavy had sat on his body and it's, you know, just squished him to a minimal. And I had, you know, even though my tours, I had seen, you know, I had seen amputations, I had seen horrible burns in our burn unit. I think this was the reality of the death in great numbers that I had not seen. And I just kept on trying to focus to the point that I was so close to going home. And I got to be a master in Vietnam of separating myself emotionally from what I was doing physically. And it took me a long time to get beyond that.
And I just have to ask again, was everyone killed on that helicopter?
Everyone was killed, okay. Yeah.
And the way you managed emotionally was to separate out your emotions?
I did.
From what you were doing?
Before I went to Vietnam, you know, I would respond very appropriately to a situation that might bring you sadness or shock or whatever by either expressing myself through tears. I mean, I never was a strong person or a person that would cry easily mm-hmm. in a situation. I was always pretty strong. But I learned very quickly while I was in Vietnam to not respond that way, because you were seeing so much physical destruction. And, you know, there were times that we would send soldiers home in body bags that had taken overdoses of drugs, because drugs were a major issue in Vietnam. Marijuana and heroin were primarily the drugs that I saw a lot of in Vietnam. And I had never been exposed to a drug situation before. I know when I was stationed at Fort Knox, we had one of the units that I would have to take supervisory duty for was the psychiatric unit right on the floor below the hospital unit that I was responsible for. And most of the patients there had drug problems, and they were Vietnam returnees. And, you know, I was aware that it was an issue, but I wasn't aware that it was such a blatant issue. And it was, you know,
it was a coping mechanism.
I think it was. I think alcohol. I know before I went to Vietnam, I would talk to some of the nurses who were assigned to my ward, and they would tell me that when they were over in Vietnam, that their social life after their work shifts, that there was a lot of drinking that occurred and a lot of partying. And, you know, I had really not not lived that life before. And so, you know, I would always make comments that, well, there's always got to be more to do than, you know, spending your time drinking on your off time, your social time. But when I went to Vietnam, I found very quickly that that was a major coping mechanism, that, you know, when we would get off work, it was not unusual for us to go over to either the officers club, we had a small officers club there by our hospital, or some of the doctors, or even some of the aviators. I dated an aviator, for a pilot, for a fair amount of time that I was over in Vietnam, and there was a lot of drinking that went on, just as a coping mechanism.
So tell me, when you came back to the United States, how did you, you said you'd separated yourself out emotionally from what you were doing. How were you able to decompartmentalize and come back together more holistically?
I probably didn't do it for at least 20 years.
Did you even recognize that you were doing it?
No, I didn't. You know, when the Vietnam War was a very, very unpopular war with a lot of American people, and most people really didn't want to, you know, discuss, I can understand if you haven't had experience with something, you know, it's hard for you to really understand when a person is trying to tell you what they've gone through. And of course, many of us came back to the United States feeling very confused about our experiences over there. Many of the American people, that, you know, there were so many demonstrations that were going on against the Vietnam War. And of course, a lot of people didn't seem to understand that the military people that were over there were, you know, there were some of us that were there on a voluntary basis, but majority of these soldiers were sent to Vietnam, and they were just doing what they felt was right and patriotic for their country. And so I remember when I came home, even in the airport in San Francisco, there were demonstrators there, many of us, and I did the same thing, got out of my military uniform as quickly as I could to fly that last leg home, because I didn't want people seeing that. I mean, for me, it was for a woman, other than the fact that I had a service ribbon that indicated that I'd been in Vietnam. Most people probably would not have assumed that I was coming from Vietnam, but the average soldier knew that they were being demonstrated against, and they were considered baby killers, and it was just not a positive feeling when you came home. And so as soon as you got off that plane in San Francisco or wherever you came, you started putting up your wall. And your wall of emotions, your wall of coming to terms with what you had been a part of. The average age of the U.S. soldier was 19 years old when they went to Vietnam, which is not the case with a lot of the conflicts that we've been involved with. And one thing that was different for Vietnam was many of the soldiers in previous wars, including even what's going on, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan, we went over as individuals and we came home as individuals. We didn't go over with a unit. And we went over to replace somebody who was coming home from Vietnam or who had gotten killed. And so you went over feeling very separated from any of your comrades that you worked with. And then you left Vietnam also coming home by yourself. And you felt very, very alone and very separated. And then, like I said, you put up your walls and you didn't talk about it.
You didn't talk about your emotions with anyone, or just with very few people that you trusted? Could you elaborate a little bit on that?
I was very, very fortunate in the fact that when I was over in Vietnam, there was a fellow from Louisville that started writing me from an article that had been written about my Bob Hope experience. And we kind of fell in love through the mail. Mm-hmm. And he was at the airport with my family to meet me. And he's a Vietnam veteran himself. He had been home for about a year before I had gotten home. And but he didn't talk a whole lot either about his experience. And through most of our time before we got married about 7 months after I got home from Vietnam. And even though we shared that experience, his time there was totally different than my time there. But, you know, we could talk really on the surface about where we served and what we did and different places in the country, but we never got into the meat and the emotional baggage that you had from that experience. It was an area that most veterans did not let other people touch.
And why do you think that's the case?
I think it was too painful.
Was that your experience?
Yes.
Too painful to talk about?
Too painful to talk about. I wanted to, when I got back home, when I was requesting what my duty assignment was going to be when I came home from Vietnam, I told them I no longer wanted them to put me on any hospital assignment where I would be taking care of soldiers. It really had had an impact on me. Mm-hmm. And, I wasn't reaching out for help from a psychologist or anything. There was no debriefing.
Did you recognize that you needed that?
No.
Type of counseling or what have you?
I don't think I was in tuned enough with my emotions, and I think I was burying it so deep inside me that it wasn't even a reality. I should have been able, I feel like I'm pretty good with psychology, mm-hmm. and I should have been mm-hmm. able to have figured out that there was a reason why I did not want to be exposed to soldiers, because it had been my love for the 4 years before that. But I actually got assigned on a pediatric unit for 4 months until I got out of service.
Just one more thing about emotional, the walls. In other words, would you not respond maybe how a person would normally respond to an emotional moment? Would you be able just to separate yourself out from that? You had experienced something that was so traumatic.
I got back from Vietnam in 1972, and I probably never shed a tear about anything until 1993, when I went up for the dedication of the Vietnam Women's Memorial. And then my wall came down. Mm-hmm. And
any tear, period, on anything?
Not on anything. Not on anything. My emotions were very flat. Mm-hmm. And, I was just, I fit the glove back into my normal routine, and I never worked in a hospital once I got out of the military. I worked as an industrial nurse for American Airfielder. I worked for an oral surgeon as an assistant, but I never have worked in a hospital since 1972.
And let me just ask you this. Looking back on the experience in Vietnam, what are your thoughts? In other words, did you ever run the mixture of emotions of this country did the right thing by fighting in that war? Did you ever think we shouldn't have been there? Out of all of the experiences and the time that has passed, what final conclusion do you have about Vietnam?
I can't help but think and admit at this point, what was the purpose? Vietnam is, we were over there to stop communism. Vietnam is a communistic country. Yes, things have changed as it's become more industrialized. The country is much more progressive than it ever was, but it is still has some of the same controls that it had, some of the same problems that it had. And, we pumped a lot of money, but more than that, we lost over 55,000 U.S. soldiers, men and women, in that war. And that is just the physical death, the emotional trauma that it has created with the veterans that were there. And most veterans that are there, I've talked to many of them since that point, done many speeches. That war changed us. It changed us, and we're concerned about what we're doing today. And are we repeating what we did back in the 60s and the 70s? And then we're seeing the current day soldier having numerous tours of duty. And, it's got to have a serious impact.
Okay. Thank you for talking about that. I know that might not have been easy to talk about. Let me ask you, did you ever feel like you were in any danger at any time during your service?
I never really felt in danger. Mm-hmm. We would hear some of the mortar rounds that would be going off in the background. But when I was there in 71 and 72, our hospital was never hit. I was on a helicopter many times with the Bob Hope and the Sammy Davis experience, and also with being close to an aviation company that we spent a lot of time with, and did some medevac trips out to some of the orphanages. And I honestly never really felt a danger, but like I said, I'm not so sure that I had a real strong touch of reality of what was going on right around me. And, just kind of lived in a panacea.
Okay. And as a female service member, do you ever recall a time you experienced discrimination?
The time that I felt discriminated was when I felt female service members were discriminated in the military, did have to do, not so much in Vietnam, but was the dependent issue of if you were married to a non-military service member, our dependents could not be considered to have dependents benefits, and that was a strong
conflict. Now, you didn't have that personal experience, but that was a policy at the time?
I did have that personal
did?
Experience.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not something that I like to talk a whole lot about. But
you don't have to.
No, I don't have a problem with it. I was married when I went to Vietnam, mm-hmm. and got a divorce while I was in Vietnam, mm-hmm. and I was married to a service member the whole time that I was on active duty, and the fellow that I was married to did not work, and I was the one who provided 100% support for him. And the military would not allow him to have dependents benefits. And it was, the KCLU really wanted me to take issue with it. But I was strongly encouraged by my head nurse that if I wanted to have the military as a career, that letting the KCLU take issue with that was probably not a good thing.
KCLU being an affiliate of the ACLU?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it was, this was when I was at Fort Knox, and was really trying to get dependents benefits for my husband at that point. And KCLU really wanted to support the women who were going through the same issue. And it was, it was a real touchy subject.
I'm sure. I have two more questions. Tell me, what did you learn most from the military?
I think strength. Strength, honor, esprit de corps. I am very patriotic. I also understand the sacrifices that military members give. And I've just recently been involved in a service project with some people that I graduated from high school with. And we adopted a family that a young man who was injured over in Iraq. It'll be 2 years this September, and he lost a leg. And there was an article written in the local newspaper about some of the challenges that his family had. And we pulled together and we totally landscaped, bought everything, totally landscaped their house so that they would have some pride, and put up a flagpole that he wanted in his front yard. And it just was so rewarding for me. I mean, I could not wait to get my hands on this young man and, thank him for what he had done and the sacrifices. He's a 25-year-old young man that has a young wife and has a 16-month-old little girl, and he is trying to figure out what direction in life he's going in. He's, totally disabled and medically retired from the military. But it just really opened my eyes to what the military member is willing to do still for service to this country.
And final question I have is, what advice would you give young women today who are thinking about serving and who do serve?
I would strongly encourage, and I do encourage, women who want a sense of adventure and also to be able to practice their nursing in ways that the civilian nursing often does not allow you to do, to take that take that chance. I would not, if you had asked me to do it again today, I would do it all over again. Would I go back to Vietnam? Absolutely. It was just an experience that made me grow as a person, made me change as a person, but in some ways, not good changes, but in most cases, really made me appreciate what we have here in this country. For the young woman, I would just say it's just can be a career filled with adventure, opportunity. The sky's the limit as far as what you can do and what opportunities you have. But the service member, especially the female service member and the women who are serving over there right now.
In Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yes, absolutely. Most of the nurses don't talk about their experience. We're expected to be strong. We're expected to, you know, pick up by the bootstraps and do whatever you need to do to keep carrying on. And you have got to process any traumatic situation that you go through. And you can't wait for 20, 25 years like I did. I went through a severe depression in 1997 and wasn't so sure that I wanted to go on. And, bottom line, it had to do with my experience and the fact that I would not recognize the fact that it had changed me and that I needed to talk about it and I needed to share the nurse's experience in Vietnam. I certainly want to share that experience with the women who are coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan, because it will have. They're involved in even more traumatic situations than the majority of us saw. And they're seeing it numerous times. And, you know, they need to talk about it. They need to tell their story. They need to seek every opportunity that they have to debrief and to be able to. It'll change you forever, but you've got to move on in order to have a quality of life. And once I processed it and put it in perspective and got the help that I needed, I was able to move on and help other people. But it took me a long time to do that.
That's awesome. That's just so awesome. Do you think if you had talked about your experience in Vietnam after you had returned to the United States, do you think that would have been critically helpful to you, just to have someone to talk to, even professionally?
Right. I know it would have. Like I said, I just, you know, I was a very strong person, and, you know, I just felt like I needed to go on. And, you know, I never had been in a situation where I had reached out to other people to help me through any disappointment.
You were always reaching out to help someone
else.
That's
right, yeah.
Reaching out to yourself.
That's right. That's a good point, Margaret. Nurses are there to help other people.
Yes.
We're not used to accepting help ourselves. And even when I started going through a depression in 97, there were many of the counselors and the psychologists and psychiatrists that I worked with that wanted to touch my experience in Vietnam, and I really wouldn't let them do that. And finally, I went to the Vet Center here in Louisville, and where I was counseled by a two-time Vietnam returnee himself. And he was the one that really started the healing process for me of my Vietnam experience. And
you talked about it.
Because I talked about it. And I talk about the Vet Center every opportunity I get. It's just a part of the rights. Doesn't cost anything to the service member who has been discharged from the service. But, you know, I was able to go there as long as I needed to help me process my Vietnam experience. And it was a lifesaver for me.
Wow. That's great. Well, that concludes the questions I have. Tell me, do you have anything else that you would like to add, or do you think there's anything else we should touch upon based on your experience that we didn't touch upon?
No, like I said, I am very, very, very proud of the experience that I had and the service that I gave.
And you should be. And thank you for your service to our country.
That's good. Glad.
Okay, we're at 50 minutes.
Okay.
And... again, thank you for your time.
Oh, you're welcome.
And it's
You did a great job.
Well, thank you. So did you. It's been enlightening to me, as I knew that I couldn't wait to do the oral histories because I knew they would be enlightening. So this concludes the interview with Captain Marge Graves, and this is Margaret Plattner signing off. Thank you.